Welcome to Radioactive Youth Media's podcast. I'm Paul Kiefer.
And I'm Lola Garcia. Radioactive is a program through KUOW, NPR's Seattle affiliate.
And today we take on a very visible dilemma in our city, gentrification. It is changing the face of our city, and we want to get a sense of the people it affects.
And for those unfamiliar with the term, gentrification is the process by which wealthier people buy and renovate stores and houses in poor neighborhoods.
Gentrification often displaces low-income and working-class people and forces communities to disperse into more affordable neighborhoods.
Of course, for those who are gentrifying, this is an unfortunate consequence of development, and few people see any alternative.
So we walked around our city, asking friends, acquaintances, and strangers to share their thoughts on gentrification. The Central District is one of Seattle's only historically black neighborhoods, and it's among the centers of gentrification in our city. To get a sense of the neighborhood as it used to be, I spoke to a local organizer named Amir Islam. I was fortunate enough to meet him on the day of Umoja Fest, a celebration of Seattle's black community that takes place in the Central District every summer. I spoke to him near Washington Middle School on South Jackson Street.
Cool. That just looks cool.
What?
Arriving everyone on a bike?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are that?
My name is Amir Islam. I'm 34 years young. I've lived in the Central District for 34 years. This neighborhood was just vigorous, man, full of life, full of energy, full of familiarity. It was a very familiar place to be. To wake up and to just simple things like your neighbors, you could like walk over to their house and like not even knock on the door, but like walk in and just be like, "Oh, what are you doing? She's upstairs." Like, "Oh, all right." Did you eat? There was that. Seattle's a place where, like, my family's the Hendersons, and then you have, like, the Jimmersons, and you have the Stantons, and then you have the da-da-da-das and the da-da-da-das. So, the family history here was really, like, deep. And, if you came around a certain area, you knew that this was the Rolexes, And it was very vibrant. So I would say also, on another level, everyone had home ownership, and it seemed like, I even remember back in the day feeling very comfortable, like, to be in a place where, like, we may have to worry about, like, food might have been a little funny, and this isn't everyone in the Central District. By the way, the Central District was mixed, like, high income, low income, just in general, like, it wasn't just like, oh, poor people. That's a misconception, like, no. But I'm saying in my household and other households, I had a single mother and, she worked a lot. So sometimes we had things, sometimes we didn't, but, like, we always had a place.
The neighborhood started to change in the 90s, and people began to notice the places they knew disappearing. Neighborhoods across the city have been changing, and others will start to gentrify soon. I live in South Park,
Hold on, where?
Okay, well, obviously not many people know the area I live in. South Park is a neighborhood in the Duwamish River in South Seattle. The South Park Bridge had been closed for about 5 or so years. Besides the freeway, that was the only other way for people to cross the Duwamish River, which stopped the flow of traffic in South Park.
The closure affected local businesses, but about a year ago, the bridge reopened, and now it's starting to pick up again.
I spoke with one of the owners of a local coffee shop / pizzeria in my neighborhood called Via Vadi. What's your name?
Maria Porco. I run a coffee shop. I opened up 5 years ago, so definitely from when I opened up, it has definitely gone up. Like, when you first open up, people need to find out about you, so people spreading the word has helped. The community has helped, but also the bridge opening up has created a lot of traffic. People come by, they drive by, and they see it, and they want to stop. So my parents have been here for 30-some years. My mom owns Napoli Pizzeria. So my mom, my brother, and I have been here for almost our entire lives. I feel like all these businesses, most of them have been here for a long time, not as long as we have, but quite a bit of time. And I know that with the bridge closure, a lot of people suffered, but I haven't really seen, a big, everybody's still here.
Some people involved in the neighborhood got together and created an action agenda, which helped fund the community center and the library. It created a sense of community that brought a wave of new faces to the area.
South Park, I think, has become one of the, like, hot new neighborhoods that families can move into and still afford and still be close to the city because there are new people moving into the neighborhood. That's kind of what keeps our business alive, is definitely, like, a lot of the other supporting local businesses. Like, the business aspect of me is, like, yes, we need the foot traffic. We need, like, the cars coming by, and you need that to survive. And but at the same time, as like someone that's been here and like part of like the community, I guess, like I love seeing people coming in and walking here and being out and about. And you know, with that too comes with you know, like we just had gotten broken into, so it's kind of nice when it's busier because people are more apt to see that. So when it's like more quiet, I think that you are like more of like a target. Any change is necessary, but you know what, like everything changes, and with it is good and with it is bad. And I think you just have to accept all of those. And I think that, you know, if you're willing to just go with it, I think it's all how you take it, because it's not necessarily good or bad. It's just the way of life, you know?
While wandering the Central District searching for strangers with opinions, I came across a person with a slightly different view on the effects that gentrification has on businesses. I actually interrupted a softball practice to ask for volunteers. And this brave dude was kind enough to step up to the plate. Did you get the softball pun?
I don't think it's great. Because you kind of lose a little bit of the, I guess, the relationship between people who are of there versus entities that are just kind of there because they can afford to be there.
Given how tense the neighborhood felt, it made sense to me that he didn't mention the word gentrification once. This dude was the only volunteer I found. Everyone else, and I tried multiple people, backed away from the topic. He was actually eager to tell me that he didn't live in the neighborhood and that he wasn't a gentrifier. He clearly wasn't thrilled about the changes, but it seemed like the issue wasn't very personal to him. I went to find people to whom it was personal.
Paul spoke to a friend on the intersection of 23rd and South Jackson Street in the Central District during the Emoji Fest parade.
My name's Ariana Holt. Some of the things I see is Leschi Elementary School. The elementary school I attended was a predominantly black school with an entire black staff, and now they're down to a really low percentage. It's really discouraging to see these kind of things happen, and I know that when I come back after college, a lot of the landmarks that I once knew won't be here. They'll be replaced with yoga bars and juice shops. Right now we're on 23rd and Jackson at the Emoji Fest parade. And already, I mean, there's less people here than I've ever seen. This used to be like the biggest parade besides Torchlight in the black community, and already it's like dwindling down. There's apartments here that are pretty recent. They weren't here 10 years ago. I mean, even just where we are right now, the way that they redid the Starbucks, they took down the mural that used to be inside of there, trying to modernize and things like that. It's a lot of that. It's a lot of small changes that when you come back, you won't even be able to recognize it, I think.
Ariana grew up in the Central District and has since moved south. I stood and watched the parade with her and a few other friends, wondering how many people in the crowd had already moved away because of rising costs of living.
Amir gave Paul a little bit more perspective on the changes in the neighborhood.
Gentrifiers come in with a sense of, like, ownership. And you have to understand that people who've been living places for almost all their lives feel very offended when you come in and you start to make certain things or do certain things without checking it by them first, checking it by the locals. I mean, that's natural in any kind of habitat. Just in our nature to be like that. And so what gentrification brought was a lot of those attitudes into neighborhoods.
I asked Amir to give me an example.
Like, we used to have simple things. Like, we'd say we'd all be in a park, right? Now, we could be in a group. Been going to this park forever, since we were kids. You know, we have ownership in this park. You know, we pick up the park, we love the park, blah, 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 blah. But a group of new homeowners can make a decision and say, we don't want that kind of gathering. It makes me feel uncomfortable when I'm walking my Yorkie at night. I don't want you there. You must be probably selling drugs, or you must be, I don't know. But because of those mentalities, you're talking about the attitudes that changed. Well, we were just fine being in our skin and just hanging out until the dusk, you know, the park closes or whatever. You know, it became a problem, a serious problem. So much of a problem that even there's laws like, oh, okay, you can't be in this park after 10 now, right? You can't do this after this. Well, why not? Well, because, you know, suspect activity is happening in these areas. Suspect activity happens in all kind of areas. So it's heightened more and sensationalized around black folks because of the fear of black folks and our melanin and who we are and our ancestry and white guilt and these things. And therefore, that's the way that they've treated us. And we know that this country wasn't really built for us anyway. Like, we get it. We know that there's no reparations coming anytime soon. Like, we get it. At least we could, like, just hang out in a park that we've grown up in without being harassed and stopped.
For Amir, this is very close to home. To get the opinion of someone from the other side of the story, Paul spoke to a new resident of the neighborhood, Tara Oglesby. She spoke with Paul in her home near Seattle University.
You know, as a white person in the neighborhood, I'm disturbed by the gentrification. But at the same time, if I'm really honest, you know, it's going to be really convenient when a few blocks away, the streetcar opens next to my house. You know, when I'm making dinner and I reach in the cabinet and I've ran out of wheat-free tamari, you know, I'm not a fan of Whole Foods, but I know it's going to be Whole Foods that I'm going to walk to go buy more tamari. And so it's complex. You know, there's going to be ways in which, like, the amenities that come from that gentrification are really good. The kinds of businesses that have been opening up since I've lived here are businesses that cater to white people. And so I might, like, intellectually say that I'm against gentrification, but really there are all these concrete ways that it's benefiting my life to live in this gentrifying neighborhood. I think as white folks, the story we want to tell ourselves is that we want to live in a diverse neighborhood, but we move in and the neighborhood doesn't stay diverse.
Tara's conflicted opinion interested me, and Amir said something that spoke directly to it. Amir serves on his neighborhood council, and he told me a story about a conversation he had with a colleague.
You know, I invited her to my house, and she, you know, come eat, whatever. And then she's like, I'm going to have you over. And so one time I was like, come on, I want to come over to your house. And she's like, okay. And then she was like, I'm sorry, I'm a gentrifier, Amir. I'm so embarrassed. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, don't feel bad, you know. I thought that actually made it worse. Because when I don't like doing something, I just don't do it. Just don't do it. So if people are actually knowing, you're like knowing that this is wrong. You're coming in knowing it. Why are you doing it? If you're going to feel that way, that to me is the part that I don't, you know, it's like people deserve to live wherever they want to live. You just want to have a nice house in the neighborhood, it's closer to your job. That's one thing. But if there's some kind of guilt and shame that you have and there's some type of knowing of wrong, that's really where we should ask our own selves as individuals, why am I doing this?
While Amir and all of our other guests may just be a few voices among many in this much larger story, they are nonetheless the voices of gentrification.
Find us at kuow.org/radioactive or on Facebook at Radioactive Youth Media. We're also on Twitter at KUOW Radioactive.
Subscribe to this program wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks to our Radioactive team, Aisha Burka, Gerardo Ramos, Jack Paradise, Julia Furukawa, Mamanza Dogra, and Rogelia Sanchez.
And thanks to our editor, Angela Ultrarad Nguyen, and all of our guests. This has been a Radioactive Youth Media podcast. Thanks for listening. Thank you.